always wondered why Jesus was so patient and just didn't tell him to go away and leave me alone, right? How's it going? Good? Yeah. Wow. Not wasting any time. Wow. So they're learning how to pray. They're making prayer beads. Isn't that cool? Wow, very neat. But they also have a secret, but I can't share it with you. So there. Hey, we got a really cool letter that I want to share with you from High Plains Unitarian Universalist Church. Guess what they want to do? They want to move in with us. We didn't even have to buy a ring. Isn't that cool? So they want to sell their building now that things have moved around, and they want to go forward on creating this interfaith center that we've been talking about. What do you think? Thank you. Thank you. Now, don't be afraid. Well, maybe a little. But if you have questions, there's going to be plenty of opportunities for you to talk to Deborah and Jim and other and Aaron about those questions. But there'll be plenty of times to have conversation about that. But I want to just share a little bit about what their letter says so that you have an idea. They voted overwhelmingly, as in 97-6, to move in with us. Okay? Lots of details to be ironed out. It's not going to happen next week, maybe the week after, but it's going to be a while. Here's what's really cool. We share Vista Grande's enthusiasm in the formation of an interfaith center. We wish for VGCC and HPCUU, did you get all that, to participate in a collaboration of commitment and work that the center will require. We will work together to face the challenges and to discuss openly with our congregations what the future holds in becoming an interfaith center in the north end of Colorado Springs. That's pretty cool, right? Yeah, yeah. Just smile and nod. Thank you. It seemed important then, in order to maybe perhaps look at a little of those fears, to use Lent as an opportunity to talk about what it means to be Christian. Because just because we're going to become an interfaith center does not mean that we have to give up our identity. And there was some talk and some concern about, you know, whether or not we'd be UCC or we're merging and all that other stuff. So I thought, you know what? Let's use Lent as an opportunity to talk about what it means to be Christian. Richard Rohr has this great book out called Eight Core Principles, and it's about looking at the eight core principles of what it means to be a Christian. Great, I thought. We're gonna go through that during Lent, and we're going to go over a couple of things there to kind of help us get grounded in who we are and who we wish to be. And then I reread the book and realized, oh, you guys are in so much trouble because it's not easy. It's not easy. But the whole notion of Lent is one of those introspective times that asks us to say, to consider what it means to be in this world as Christian, as a follower of Jesus, in a world that's pluralistic and that has so many other good truths out there. So let's play a little, shall we? Shall we? The first principle that Richard offers is this. The teachings of Jesus is our central reference point, not our only, but our central. And so doing, we stand with Jesus. Now, how do we stand with Jesus? Well, he's our guide in how we stand in our culture, how we stand against our culture, and how we stand in the service of our culture. What does that mean? Not rhetorical. Yeah, what kind of work? Aren't you glad you're back? Okay. Really? Because I'm pretty sure everybody hears you. Okay, good. Who we are and what we're contributing and taking away from the world that we want to live in. That's good. But it's not all. So come on, what else you got? What does it mean to be Christian? Go ahead.
Well, to, it's along the same lines, but to live out our faith instead of just sitting on the
What does that mean? You got away with not answering that question downstairs. Surprise.
Stepping up and taking a stand when it's necessary.
Ooh. So that's against culture. Standing with culture, against culture, and in the service of culture. Okay? What else you got? Can anybody here tell me what it means to be a follower of Jesus? Yeah. Got any ideas? Will you think about it for a few minutes and let me know? Just raise your hand if you think. Yeah, go ahead.
You have to... Oh, she did not write
that. When you get it back, will you let me know? Okay, raise your hand. Okay, Gabriel, you got it? Okay, anybody think about it, you let me know. Anybody think about it, you let me know. Okay? What did we learn from Jesus? That's an easy one. Come on.
Love.
What else? Yes. Following in Jesus' footsteps. What does that mean exactly? Do you know? Doing what he does. And what does he do? Helps people. Okay. Thank you. Was that so hard? Okay. How else? Oh. Okay, Zachary. Yeah, see how you're taking them off the hook? What else you got?
Learning how to love.
How do we do that? How do we love? Sharing, caring. What else?
Thanking others.
Thanking others, giving to others. Excellent. Thinking?
Thinking of others.
Thinking of others. Wow. What else you got? Improving the environment around you and others. I like it. What else? You thought you're off the hook, but you're not. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Increasing
learning, so using your brain. Yeah, Jesus used his brain, didn't he? Absolutely. What else? Well, we know what it looks like to follow Jesus, right? Because he showed us what to do. But one of the things that we don't always talk about is he showed us how to do it. What's the difference? What to do and how to do it.
Leading by example.
Leading by example, okay. What does that mean?
Well, you know, doing the things that you say should be done. You know, demonstrating.
Oh, all right, I'll do it. Like that?
Yeah.
Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. Okay.
What? Just like the reflective mode. You know?
Yeah.
1,100 kids.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's just when you're
in the role. Okay. Okay. So not just what to do, but how to do it. What else? Do you remember when I said, does it ever surprise you that Jesus didn't just tell the devil to get the boogers out of the way because it was getting on his nerves? He didn't, though, did he? What did he do? What did he demonstrate?
Patience.
Patience, thoughtfulness, contemplation, understanding, until finally he said, okay, enough. What do we tend to do? Don't we, though? What if somebody's doing something like that is the exact opposite of what we think that should be done? Don't make me give you examples, because all you got to do is pick up the paper. So pick one. We like to criticize, lash out, judge, and accuse, don't we? Why? Well, I don't know. I know a lot of activists that complain and judge and get stuff done. Oh, could you not jump to the end of my sermon right away? Okay. You need to be more inclusive. You need to get the message out at the end of the day. Go ahead.
Well, I think when you talk about doing things the way Jesus did, it was with love. And so, like, an example would be not doing
stuff begrudgingly, not setting up a soup kitchen because these people need to be fed, and pass them through the line and throw the food on their plate, but talk with the people, get to know their story, and not to judge them, oh, well, I'm serving you food because it's what I'm called to do, but you shouldn't be in this situation.
Okay.
Instead, understanding their situation, trying to maybe find some solution for them.
Should we judge the people that caused the situation? See, this is where it gets tough. We were talking this morning in the Percolate group about grace. And Nancy brought up a really good couple of examples about grace showing up. And it was beautiful. The examples were beautiful. But grace, which is part of this whole Lenten journey and all about what it means to stand with Jesus, means to stand in a place of grace. And grace is a tricky word. So grace means, for example, being patient, being non-judgmental, not reacting, but being contemplative, okay? I'm going to give you a test, okay, on what non-reactive and being contemplative can look like, okay? And this test is more for one person in this room than anybody else, and that would be Aaron, because I'm going to tell you something about myself. Okay? And I'm going to ask you to be contemplative and not reactive. Okay? You ready? Two things. I have very strong opinions. See? She couldn't do it. She couldn't do it, could she? And I like to be right. You failed. So I'm going to give you an example of grace based on that information that drove me crazy. Okay? But it shows up in weird places, and it teaches us how to be like Jesus, not just the what we're supposed to do. A number of years ago, I gave a brilliant sermon, if I do say so myself. It was good. It was good. It was about forgiveness, but it was about not just sin, it was about corporate sin. Okay? Now, corporate, little wordplay, corporations, get it? It was really, really good. We can pick out a lot of corporations that we see are sinful, yes? Oh, and I did. And I sculpted and crafted this sermon beautifully. And I talked about, you know, pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies and big box stores and things that take advantage of people and, you know, all that stuff. And it was good. It was good. Everybody who came through my lines, that was, gave me a lot to think about. That was really right on. Thanks for challenging us. That was really good. You know, how's it feel? That's right. And then I got a 6-page letter that somebody in the congregation wrote to me, whom I really liked, raking me over the coals. How dare I group this? And it wasn't just a rant. It was well-crafted, not disrespectful. I didn't read it that way at first, but it was just, I'm like, okay, I'm going to meet with him. We're going to have a conversation. I'm going to take the higher ground and teach him what I meant. So we met for coffee, and he's going through this whole thing. I'm like, I think you missed the point. I really think, and I was gentle. Oh, so good. Oh, so good. I was very gentle. I said, I really think you missed the point. Let's go over it again. No, let's go over it again. No, let's go over it again. And finally, something happened that I can only call grace. You're getting another chance here, Aaron. Because I was being told to shut up. She's back there doing this. Somewhere in my head, and I don't typically go this way, because I want to convince you that, no, this is scriptural. What I'm telling you is real and true and based in authority. And you hear something said, shut up. Just shut up. That was grace that I could not stand. It was grace that showed up from I don't know where. I do, but I don't. And it made me stop in my tracks and listen to what he was actually saying. He was not defending his insurance company, his medical insurance company that he worked for. He was not defending corporate sin. He was not defending any other piece of the sermon that may have offended him. He was defending who he was. Because in his life, he had been a good person and done good things and supported his family and raised his family. And he experienced pain and anguish. And when he heard the sermon, all he could hear was an attack, and it hurt him. It hurt him, not just because of what I said, but just because of whatever else he brought to the table that day. And by the grace of God, I shut up. And I said, wow, you've done a really good job. Or that must have been really painful for you to have gone through all of that with your company or your family. Because then he just started talking. And then I realized that the point of us coming together was not for me to convince him of what I thought I knew. The point was to come together and to just sit in the muck of whatever that sermon brought up for him. It was a moment of grace that we don't expect, because we expect beautiful things, right? We expect things to show up and go, oh, that was lovely. And a lot of times it is. But a lot of times it's challenging. And a lot of times it causes us to zip our lips and sit in our hands and just be in the muck and not try to fix it and not try to convince the world that this is the way it should be, but rather demonstrate by how we've been shown that we're just supposed to show up. Jesus just showed up. He challenged everybody, but he always listened to the Sadducees and the Pharisees. He always listened to the quote-unquote sinners. He always showed up and stayed with them in the muck. He always showed up for those who were suffering. And he didn't always fix it the way you would expect him to fix it, except they were healed when they walked away. So to follow and to be Christian and to stand up for culture, in culture, and against culture, for one another, in the need of one another, to be in a space where we can say, yes, I am unapologetically Christian, doesn't mean I believe this and you better too. It means because of this thing that can infuse me every once in a while out of the blue, I have the potential to just show up for you and listen to you, and accept you, not judge you, not accuse you, to look at my own demons, and to just be in that space where we together can say we are beloved. It's a tough job, because we initially want to react. And what does it mean to sit quietly and just focus? And if you want an answer to that question, look where most of the answers came from today. From the ones who are sitting and focusing and beating and praying. Sometimes we just need to stop, contemplate, and be. Let the people say, amen. Amen.